Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for July 12, 2016. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and today I'll be talking with Stephen Wiley about how much the abundance of signaling pathway proteins in a cell affects signal transduction. Information flows through a signaling pathway by sequential interactions between core components of the pathway, many of which have enzymatic activity. Adaptor proteins don't directly participate in relaying the signal, and they don't have enzymatic activity, but they're important for signaling because they bring core components together and facilitate their interactions. We don't have a very good idea how much the abundance of core components and adaptor proteins vary between cells, or how much this variation affects signaling through the pathway. Stephen Wiley's group at the Pacific Northwest National Laboratory has found that for at least one signaling pathway, it's the abundance of the adaptor proteins, not the abundance of the core signaling components, that limits signaling through a pathway. Wiley spoke to me from Richland, Washington. Hi, Dr. Wiley. Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast.
I'm very glad to be here.
First, let's talk about the specific signaling pathway that you focused on in this study, which is signaling downstream of the EGF receptor. Why that pathway?
There's actually a number of good reasons for it. First of all, it's a very evolutionary conserved pathway being found in worms, fruit flies, as well as humans. It plays a central role in development, wound healing, and cell growth, so that it really is fundamentally important in the way that cells live. Second, it is a very prominent pathway in cancer. Some of the earliest, most successful cancer therapeutics actually targeted the EGF receptor pathway. And third, I have been studying it for over 35 years, so I have a very personal interest in understanding how it works. Before I retire, I want to understand at least something about how it works. All in all, the EGF receptor is probably one of the best model systems for understanding cell signaling.
In this study, you quantified the abundance of each of the proteins that are involved in this pathway, the EGF pathway, in different types of cells. Why did you do that?
Well, in essence, what we wanted to do is to build a predictive mathematical model of cell signaling. And to build a mechanistic model, you really need to know the amounts of the different signaling proteins. Until very recently, however, the technology to measure the absolute protein abundance in cells did not exist. So this is actually the first study to accurately measure the level of all the proteins in a particular signaling pathway. As to why we did different cells, we were interested in comparing normal cells and cancer cells, mostly focusing on breast cancer cells. We knew that the different cells, the normal and the cancer cells, responded differently to epidermal growth factor, EGF. The question was whether we could understand why they responded differently based upon their protein abundance pattern. So the idea is that if they respond differently, you should see some differences in their protein abundance. And by figuring out which proteins were different between the cell types, we could sort of identify what was dysregulated in cancer.
Did you also compare the differences in abundance of these proteins between individual cells of the same cell type? Or were you looking at populations of cells?
Well, we were looking at cell populations, essentially trying to put absolute numbers on the average per cell. A number of investigators have previously looked at differences in protein expression among cells in a population using technologies such as flow cytometry, and it's seen mostly log-normal distribution. However, flow cytometry and other similar techniques only give you a relative number, not an absolute one. But to do mathematical modeling, you need absolute numbers. We could actually combine the two different approaches. In other words, measure a cell population, say, this protein is present at 10,000 copies per cell, then do flow cytometry, and then use the absolute numbers we get from the proteomic studies to actually calibrate the values that you get in a flow cytometer. So if you combine the two, you could actually get absolute number of these different proteins in each individual cell. And that basically would give you a great foundation to make predictive mathematical models of individual cells in a population.
Which proteins that participate in EGF signaling did you measure in the study? How many of the proteins and what do they do?
We actually measured three classes of proteins, core proteins such as RAS, RAF, and ERK. We measured adapters that couple receptors to signaling pathways. We measured feedback regulators, which are induced in response to cell signaling.
And what did you find? How do the abundances of those proteins vary between cells of different type?
Well, we made two major findings. First, that you can sort all the proteins into two groups, those that are constant across cell types and those that are highly variable. For the constant proteins, we found that some of them, such as adapters, were found at far, far lower levels than either upstream or downstream proteins. In essence, these low-abundance adapter proteins act as choke points or control points in cell signaling. The other thing we found is that the feedback regulatory proteins, those were also found at very, very low levels in cells and varied widely between cells. So it looks like, for the most part, cell type-specific differences in response to EGF are most likely due to the variable levels of these feedback regulatory proteins.
So in terms of pathway evolution, I think it makes sense that these adapter proteins would represent points of control where it would, so that it would make regulating a pathway more efficient.
Well, it makes sense from an evolutionary viewpoint, I agree, because, you know, one of the things that's important is the fact that when a cell changes its gene expression pattern, it's got to, in essence, has to assume that what's out there is predictable. And so if everything is different in a cell at all times, then how could you ever evolve any reproducible control mechanism? What we find is that most of the adapters are not highly variable, but the highly variable feedback regulators work by interacting with the adapters. So the regulatory nodes are actually very low abundant. And that makes sense from a viewpoint is the fact that if you want to turn something on and off very quickly, you want it to be very low abundant. It's much easier to phosphorylate a couple of thousand proteins in a cell than it is to phosphorylate, you know, tens of thousands of proteins in a cell. Because you can turn them on, you can turn them off because the numbers are few. So we're seeing the control nodes that really regulate information flow through the cell are these very low abundant proteins, and that the proteins that actually interact with them that regulate the flow of information can be rapidly turned up and down by changes in transcription. So it really makes it very clear how the overall pathway and how the overall flow of information is regulated in these cells. And what's also very interesting is the fact that different signaling pathways interact with each other, so that one signaling pathway will interact with another signaling pathway. And we're finding that the points at which these different signaling pathways interact are at the points of the adapters and these central controllers. And so it really, just the protein abundance alone, really shows you what the regulatory architecture of these pathways are.
You compared the abundances of these proteins between normal cells and cancer cells. What was the difference between those two cell types? I mean, how did the cancer cells differ from normal cells?
Well, the cancer cells, for the most part, as far as the core components, were all the same. Where they really varied is that they varied in the expression of the feedback regulators, the proteins that actually control the regulatory nodes. So the idea isn't that in cancer cells everything has changed. There's only a selected series of changes. And these selected series of changes are actually focused on where the information flow is controlled. And so that's fundamentally what we found.
You mentioned it was the feedback regulators that seem to be affected in cancer cells. How about the adapter proteins? Because if those adapter proteins are mediating signaling crosstalk, I mean, there's so much rewiring going on in cancer cells, one would think that maybe the adapters would also be variable in the cancer cells.
Right. One of the things we did is that once we saw that the adapters were critical proteins, we actually looked at some gene amplification databases, which showed that, in fact, a number of adapter proteins like Schick and GRAP2 are amplified in some cancers at a significantly higher frequency. So it looks like some cancers actually escape growth control, perhaps, by amplifying the adapter proteins. That means they can now signal better than with the normal cell.
What does this mean in terms of understanding information flow through signaling networks in general, and then also in the context of cancer, how that can be altered in a cancer cell?
Well, the implications are actually profound in our opinion. All previous models of EGF receptor signaling in normal and cancer cells assume that adapters are highly abundant. As you might imagine, those models do not work very well. We now see that they are actually the main control points of signaling downstream of receptors. We now have a way to actually build models that are predictive. We also have discovered that some of the most important regulators of signaling are present at vanishingly low levels in cells, so they haven't been studied very much. We found that there tends to be a direct correlation between how abundant a protein is and how much it is studied. The most abundant proteins in cells actually have the most publications on them because, frankly, they're much easier to see. These small levels of adapters and regulatory proteins means that it's really hard to see them. And if you're trying to investigate something, it's really hard to see. You really can't get a lot of information. So we're finding these very low abundant proteins actually seem to be the most important regulators of signaling. So now we have a way of building a model that not only reflects their importance, but we have the technology to measure them and study them. And of course, ultimately, what we'd love to do is to use these data to build models that will predict how a cancer cell will respond to treatment. The idea is to take a small biopsy sample from a patient, analyze the level of the key proteins to describe the state of the cells, put it into a computer, and then basically predict how that cell will respond to various treatments. That's really where we would like this research to go. But it's probably a little time off before we're at that level of detail.
We've been talking here specifically about signaling downstream of the EGF receptor. Do you think that the principles that you've uncovered about signaling network regulation would extend to other pathways as well?
We think they will. I mean, I think we've discovered some fundamental principle of how signaling is regulated. And at the very least, we have demonstrated the power of knowing the numbers of signaling molecules in a cell and new ways of investigating it. But, you know, if you look at other proteomic studies that other people have done, you see the same trends. You see a very, very characteristic abundance of certain proteins across different cell lines. And so if you simply look in the literature and look for the relative abundance of the proteins, you see that the kinds of things we're seeing in the EGF receptor pathway, you see in other cell types as well. So yes, we think that what will happen is that this will sort of drive the development of new approaches to quantify signaling proteins and use this as a basis of building models that actually have some predictive value.
Stephen, thanks for speaking with me.
Thank you very much, and it was my pleasure.
That was Stephen Wiley discussing a paper published in the July 12th issue of Science Signaling by Shi and colleagues. You can read that article online at stke.sciencemag.org. The Science Signaling Podcast is a production of Science Signaling and the American Association for the Advancement of Science, advancing science, serving society. If you have any comments or questions, you can write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and AAAS, thanks for listening.